First off, does it feel like a real St. Patrick's Day this year?
Well, yes and no. Yes, in that it's actually occurring. No, in that normally we would have opened up at 9 o'clock and had 50 people in here already.
Normally, this time of year, Detroit's Corktown would be dressed up in green and gold, with bars filled to the brim for St. Patrick's Day. But for the second year in a row, celebrating the holiday looks a little different. This is Stateside. I'm Bryce Huffman, in for April Baer. Exactly 1 year ago today, Stateside spoke with PJ Ryder, owner of PJ's Logger House in Corktown. The pandemic was just in its infancy, and the unknown seemed infinite. With all bars and restaurants closed for indoor dining, PJ wasn't sure the bar would make it to March 17th, 2021. But luckily, he did make it. And today, he's been welcoming patrons in for the holiday celebration.
And seeing familiar faces that I haven't seen in over a year, for the most part, it makes me feel like it really is St. Patrick's Day because it's been a weird year for everybody, and not seeing people is probably the weirdest part of the whole thing. So I've already had a number of people come in that I've known for many, many years that I haven't seen in over a year, and it's great to see them.
Aside from opening later, what are some changes at the Logger House as compared to pre-pandemic St. Patrick's Day?
Oh, well, first of all, I mean, there's the 50% capacity limit. We've even taken it lower than that because 50% capacity for us is 75 people, but we can't socially distance with that many people. So our limit in the bar and the patio that today is 50 people. So that's the biggest single difference. The fact that all my staff and myself are wearing masks and everybody who comes in is wearing a mask, that's a bit different. But in all honesty, it's been a very rough year. We were trying to, be open during the summer and just were not making ends meet. And when we got shut down in November, I really did think that that might be it. But first of all, the GoFundMe, and thank you to everybody who put something into the GoFundMe. That kept us alive until we could get some more grants and things together. And right now, we're looking cautiously optimistic to the future. Financially, because of grants and loans from all kinds of different organizations, we're in a pretty solid financial position. But we have to get our business up and going again because those grants and loans and things like that are not going to continue forever. We've got to get the business going. People have to come out. And to do that, people are going to have to get vaccinated and all that kind of thing. So, like I said, I'm very cautiously optimistic, but I feel much more like a light at the end of the tunnel. Whereas last year on St. Patrick's Day, it was pure chaos. We really didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know where we would be in 2 weeks. And in all honesty, we never expected this thing to go for a whole year, and we didn't expect to have 1 million people to die. And that's just a bit of a shock even today. But we've kind of waded our way through it like so many other places have done everything they can to stay open and keep going. And in the end, here it is, St. Patrick's. We're open. We're serving food. We're serving drinks. It's a little different because the big thing that's missing from PJ's, which everybody identifies this place with, is music. We can't do the band thing, at least not for a while. And that's still something to come. We'll see how that goes in the next few months.
Are you expecting a good turnout for the rest of the day?
I think we'll have an okay turnout. I'm expecting that, yes, we will see quite a few people as the day goes on. I don't think I'm going to expect any rush where I'm going to have to say, nope, nobody can come in. But if we could hit our capacity once or twice during the day, I'd be happy with that. And I'm expecting to see people. And as a day and people get off work and decide they want to go out a little bit and taking a chance on, going out again. And a lot of people, I've already had two or three people tell me today, this is the first place I've gone to in a year. And so I think that people want to get out. They want to do things. They want to be part of the St. Patrick's thing and just be part of the city life in general. But we've got to get the COVID under control before I think most people are going to feel comfortable going out and mixing with other people that they don't know. But yes, I'm expecting a good day. I'm not expecting a great day. I'm not expecting a day where we're just so exhausted at the end of the day, we're just wiped out. We work so hard that we just are wasted, but I am expecting to be see regular people all the way today from now until 11 o'clock tonight when we close. I think we will see regular turnout, and looking forward to it.
If you could wave a magic wand and change things, how would you want things to look for next year's St. Patrick's Day?
If I can, well, I would hope that we have this COVID under control to a point where it is a normal affliction, and not something that is wiping out people left and right and overstressing hospitals and doctors and nurses and all that kind of thing. My biggest thing, if I could wave that magic wand, like one thing, it'd be for COVID to disappear. I can remember last February, one of my more astute customers asked me if I was worried about COVID. And I looked at him like, why would I worry about COVID? He goes, oh, it's going to be big. It's going to really affect you. And I said, really? And a month later, we were closed. And I was like, I had never expected that. So my big wish for next year would be the COVID has disappeared. People have returned to going out, to enjoying their friends, enjoying their family, enjoying acquaintances, and coming to places like BJ to hear Stone Clover play all afternoon again.
PJ Ryder, owner of PJ's Lager House in Detroit's Corktown neighborhood, thank you so much for being with me, PJ.
Hey, really thank you for calling us. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. And even if you don't make it out this today, make it out in the upcoming weeks and months, and we're really glad to see you.
It's time for a short break. In just a minute, we'll dive into the history of Michigan's Irish immigrants, both in Corktown and around the state. Be right back.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
You probably know that Detroit's Corktown was once an Irish enclave, but it wasn't the only place where immigrants from Ireland settled around the state. A new book looks at the stories of Irish settlements all across the state, from Corktown to Marquette. Here to tell us more about that history are the authors of Irish Immigrants in Michigan, A History and Stories, Pat Cummins and Elizabeth Rice. Welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So when we think of big Irish enclaves in America during periods of heavy European immigration, we think of places like Boston, New York City, maybe even Chicago, big cities with lots of work. How much of a draw was the swampy Midwestern frontier of 19th century Michigan?
Well, originally, yes, people came in on the eastern seaboard cities, but as, you know, immigration began to take off and rise dramatically in kind of from the mid-1800s, those cities were crowded. New York City was crowded, Boston, Philadelphia, and it was difficult for people to actually step off the boat and find a place to live and find a place to work and managed to support their families if they had been fortunate enough to bring them along. So places in the far west, such as Detroit, began to seem like a possible place where people could start again. So yes, it was known as kind of a swampy outpost, although Detroit, of course, had been, you know, settled as a frontier place and a trading place by the French, the fur trading community, in the 1700s. So Detroit had kind of a reputation as a Catholic enclave already, which was appealing to lots of the Irish who were coming over. And you would have to also kind of understand that those eastern cities that were getting so crowded, it wasn't always the most welcoming place for new immigrants who came in. There was fierce competition for housing and work. So people did begin to think maybe they would go further west.
And Pat, what brought the first Irish immigrants to Michigan, and where did they settle?
I think the first immigrants were more adventurers, looking for better opportunities. Like, I could think of people like John Johnson, who went up to Chippewa County. I could think of George O'Keefe in Detroit. I could think of Charlie O'Malley up in Mackinac Island. And it was more the older people who immigrated to Michigan, and some of them were more wealthy than the ones who came later on.
And Elizabeth, where do we find some surprising pockets of Irish settlement in Michigan, places that we might not typically expect?
A place that people might not expect would be Beaver Island over in Lake Michigan. And Beaver Island was really popular with Irish people who came over in the early 1800s. As Pat was saying, Mackinac Island already had some Irish immigrants. The fur trade in Michigan was booming in the early 1800s. And people who traveled from Mackinac Island over to Beaver Island found a perfect harbor. They found plentiful beaver pelts that were in such high demand. So many Irish people settled there. They were routed off the island in the early 1850s, when it kind of became an enclave for a congregation of followers of Mormonism. And under their leader, either you had to convert to Mormonism or you had to leave. So for a while, the Irish were gone. But once that leader had been removed from Beaver Island, the Irish immigrants just came back and they wrote home. And this would have been during the famine years in Ireland. So in the 1845 through 1850, and there were many people who just had nothing. And so they came, and they came to Beaver Island. And so many Irish came to Beaver Island. Irish was the first language of everyone. All business was conducted in the Irish language. So you might not think of that. We think of Detroit. It's over there on the East Coast. It was more accessible. But Beaver Island is a fantastic, even today, enclave of many, many descendants of Irish immigrants.
Just to add to that, I can think of the Upper Peninsula. During the copper mining era, thousands of Irish went up there to the copper mines. Many of them came from Ireland directly, from County Cork. There was a copper mines in County Cork. And when the copper mines declined in Ireland, they headed straight over to the Keweenaw, Houghton, Hancock, where the copper mines were. And thousands of them between 1845 and 1880 in particular, they mined in every type of work that was going.
Corktown is an old neighborhood in Detroit, just west of downtown. It's where we see St. Patrick's Day play a big role this time of year. What is the history of the Irish community in that part of the city?
Well, you had the Irish immigrants who came from the eastern cities, and most of them settled on the east side of Detroit from the early 1800s on, but the numbers, they just continued to grow. And particularly after the Erie Canal was opened in 1825, hundreds of Irish immigrants, among others, are heading to Detroit. So the east part of Detroit is getting very crowded. And so eventually the Irish immigrants begin moving over to the west side, and it becomes known as an Irish settlement. And since many of these people came from the county of Cork in Ireland, it became known as Corktown. And Pat can talk about one or two of those famous immigrants that hailed from Cork and were part of Corktown's beginning.
One of the first Irish immigrants to Detroit was a gentleman called George O'Keefe. He was born in County Cork also around 1796, and he was educated in Trinity College in Dublin and over in England then as well. And he studied law. Now, George left Ireland and he arrived in New York, but he didn't settle there. He made his way to Detroit, where he became a probate judge, and he was said to be an Irish gentleman in the truest and fullest sense of the word. He was learned, cultured, brilliant, and witty. And he was founder of the St. Patrick Society in 1829. Even though he had left Ireland, he was still interested in all things Irish. And he became leader also of St. Patrick's Day parades and festivals. And in 1842, I believe, he gave the welcoming speech at a banquet at which 800 guests were there. So there was quite a crowd there. And there were women there also, I believe. But they were to keep the gentlemen in proper order. No alcohol was served during that meal because there was a Catholic temperance society, and the women were firm that their gentlemen would not be drinking on St. Patrick's Day.
It's very different than how people choose to celebrate it now in America. Pat, I know you're joining us from Dublin. How are you spending this St. Patrick's Day?
Well, I'm having a very quiet day here. I'm living a very quiet life here. Of course, we have the lockdown. I had my breakfast, of course, and then I went for a short walk. We are not allowed to go outside the 5-mile limit, either by car or meeting friends or whatever. The regulations are that we don't meet in groups either. So Every family is living and celebrating it in its own bubble. There are no parades. 2 years ago and previous years, you could get 50 American college bands coming from the U.S. marching in O'Connell Street and with floats, etc., etc. But not this year or not last year. But hopefully, with the vaccination coming in and people being vaccinated, maybe next year we will celebrate in a proper way.
Hopefully. And how about you, Elizabeth? How are you spending this St. Patrick's Day?
Well, I'm wearing green, although traditionally blue was the color for St. Patrick before green kind of took over as the festivities color. It's a lovely day here with the sun shining, so I always take that as a bit of good luck. But we can't go out too much yet. So, you know, kind of quiet hellos and wishing folks a happy St. Patrick's Day from afar. And like Pat said, hoping that we can soon gather with friends and family again and celebrate things in a bigger way.
Pat Commons and Elizabeth Rice, thank you so much for joining me today. Both are the authors of Irish Immigrants in Michigan, A History in Stories. Thanks again for joining.
Thank you so much. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you for being on the show. If you like, I would like to speak a few words in Gaelic.
Of course.
Benachti, the Fela, Padraic, Orib Galair. Happy St. Patrick's to you all.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm Bryce Huffman. You can find the full Stateside show at michiganradio.org. Today's show was produced by April Van Buren. Our theme music is by 14KT. Additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening.